The following recording was produced by Christ Redeemer Church of Hanover, New Hampshire. The speaker is Doug Cooper. You may find more information on the church and its various resources on the web at www.christredeemerchurch.org.
Our scripture reading today is taken from Genesis chapter 25, 19 through 34, and Genesis 32, 22 through 31. These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham fathered Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Paddan Aram, the sister of Laban the Aramean, to be his wife. And Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife, because she was barren. And the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. The children struggled together within her, and she said, "If it is thus, why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord, and the Lord said to her, Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other shall serve the younger." When her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, all his body like a hairy cloak, so they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel, so his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. When the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Once, when Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the field, and he was exhausted. And Esau said to Jacob, "Let me eat some of that red stew, for I am exhausted." Therefore, his name was called Edom. Jacob said, "Sell me your birthright now." Esau said, "I am about to die. Of what use is a birthright to me?" Jacob said, "Swear to me now." So she swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went away. Thus Esau despised his birthright. The same night he arose and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and everything else that he had. And Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the break of day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. But then he said, "Let me go, for the day has broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of this place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. This ends the reading of God's word.
Thank you, Trevor. Well, in case you missed us here last week, that reading should clue you into the fact that we are once again back in the book of Genesis. We've been dipping in and out of the book of Genesis for over 4 years now. And I think that the main reason for that is because, one, it's a really big book, if you haven't noticed before. And perhaps because we're trying to savor it, it's good. It's been great to keep returning to these big, engaging narratives through the years. Now, last week, to get us kicked off, we heard from Pastor Don from up in Hanover, and he gave us a broad overview of the book of Genesis. And in it, he pointed out what Genesis, and really what the whole of the Bible, is most concerned with communicating to us. That it doesn't primarily give us advice. It doesn't primarily give us moral lessons, though it does do some of that. And although we do find these big and engaging narratives here, Genesis isn't simply a series of tales about spiritual heroes that, you know, we're supposed to, you know, get out our Sunday school pom-poms and shake about because of them. You know, those things are not the chief concern of Genesis or of the Bible, for that matter. Rather than that, the underlying thing that Genesis tells us and that the whole of the Bible tells us is the story of, and I'm just repeating what Don said here last week, it's the story of who God really is and the story of who we really are and why, in light of those two realities, that we are in dire need of Him. That we're in dire need of Him to break into our world. That we're in dire need of Him to break into our very lives. So that is an abbreviated recap of Pastor Don's overview of Genesis from last week. But actually, that plays right into this morning's message. So last week, we got an overview of Genesis to help knock off a bit of the dust and get us reoriented the book of Genesis, okay? And so now this morning, by way of review, I'm going to zoom in just a little bit further than that and give us an overview of one of the main players in the book of Genesis. So we're going to come back around and consider the life of Jacob. We have done this before, but we're going to just do an overview of his life. And among other things, this should hopefully set the stage for the rest of the book for us going forward. But playing off of Don's message a little bit more, while I still can do that, I would argue that we can look into this ancient book, and it's ancient, okay? This is thousands of years old. We can look into it and find that it really doesn't feel very dusty after all. In fact, as we drop down into the life of Jacob this morning, I think you might be surprised by just how fresh and how relevant this actually comes across. And here's why. This is the story of who we really are. And the truth is, we really haven't changed all that much, all right? Those two same qualities that Don highlighted last week, the awesome and the awful, you guys remember this? The remarkable and the reprehensible aspects of our nature, of the human condition, it's all here. It's all in the life and in the story of Jacob. But once again, that's not the only reason why this should strike us as being so fresh and so relevant all these years later. The other reason is because this is the story of who God really is, right? This is the story of who God really is as well. And so the insights that we find here, insights into us, into the human condition, they're all framed for us by the ultimate storyteller. God is the creator here. Once again, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and then the story follows on from there. God is the creator. He's the unbiased author who is framing things for us here, giving us commentary from outside of His creation, is only He can do. Is only He can do. And so yes, He is a character in the story of humanity. He is. But only because He's chosen to write Himself into the story. And so that begs the question, okay? So what is the story here? What's so fresh and relevant about the life of Jacob? What does it teach us about God in the manner in which he chooses to break into the world and to break into our lives? And so let's look at that. Let's find out. So for our message this morning, I've got three things for us. First off, we will look back at the schematics of Jacob's life. And by that, I just mean the conditions, all right? What is his background? What's the situation with his family life and his upbringing? Just looking at some of the shaping influences of his life for that. Secondly, we'll look back at the scheme of Jacob's life. In other words, what drove Jacob? What was he after? What was he about? And then lastly, we'll look at the grand scheme of Jacob's life. So underlying and overarching Jacob's circumstances, underlying and overarching his choices. What's the story of his life really about? What's it all about? What's going on behind the scenes? So let me just say those again and then we'll move ahead. So we're looking at three things: the schematics of Jacob's life, the scheme of Jacob's life, and the grand scheme of Jacob's life. So the schematics, his background. We've all got one, right? Now, right up front, let me just point out something about Jacob's family history. We're going to get into his family history, but let me point one thing out first. If you go back two generations to Jacob's grandfather Abraham, you get a really critical piece of information. We find it in Genesis chapter 12. Grandpa Abe, if I can call him that, Grandpa Abe has a life-changing encounter with God. And beginning at verse 1 of chapter 12, we get dropped right down into this encounter that he's having. We don't know exactly why or how things are happening, but we're dropped right down into it and we get this. It says, "Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation. And I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So Abram went as the Lord told him. So there you go. And so it would seem, if we're thinking about this, it would seem that Jacob's grandfather was a very unique guy. All right. He was chosen by God to be the beginning of a promise that would one day bless all the ends of the earth, the entire earth. Kind of a big deal. Kind of a big deal. And so in terms of Jacob's family, clearly, right? Clearly we know his background, what his background was like. If his grandfather was handpicked by God for this lofty, this divine responsibility, then surely Jacob was born into a very noble, exemplary family. Right? So enough said. We can go on to our next point. We've got that figured out. Well, but that's not what's going on, though. If you've read this, you know that that's not the story. If you recall, if you've been with us in Genesis in the past, then you know that this is not at all the case. Like I said a moment ago, we tend to think that the Bible ought to be a series of tales about a whole line of truly noble, exemplary characters that we should then model our lives after, but a closer examination proves that that's just not the case. That's not what's going on. Nor is it the case elsewhere, right? I mean, think about it. Growing up in school, going to history class, right? You learn about these certain pivotal historical figures. You get a piece of the puzzle, you get a snapshot, but then you get older and you learn some greater details, you see some biographies or something like that, and the extra details typically aren't very flattering concerning these folks. Our heroes' images get tarnished and defeated as we learn more. I remember getting into my late teens and early 20s, I can't remember which it was, and getting into a candid conversation with my folks about our extended family, about some of the family secrets. Do you guys have this experience getting a little bit older and then it's just kind of like, oh, well, actually, it's really interesting kinds of conversations. I'll give you one example. I'll offer one example. I remember hearing about my sweet great aunt Opal. I remember being at her house in Washington, PA. It was like one of these like really big, creaky houses with little passageways and warped floors and hiding spots and stuff. I mean, the kind of things that kids just absolutely love. And she seemed like the oldest human being on the face of the planet. Okay. She was born in 1892. So to me as a little kid, she could have been a couple hundred years old as far as I was concerned. She was ancient and she couldn't have weighed more than 90 pounds. She was bent over. She had blue hair, not the of the punk rock variety, if you guys know what I'm talking about right now, if you've seen this. And, but she was one of the sweetest ladies ever. One of the, you know, pinching my cheeks. Super sweet. And I remember my mom telling me once I got a bit older that she'd been married to a man who was a real wild one. I never got the chance to meet, this gentleman. And what my mom told me was that he was wild. He was a coke addict back in the 40s. Like, back in the 40s. Okay. And he was running around on her. He had another child. And so they split up. And so they were the talk of the town because of that. And she was a real head turner in town. She was a unique lady. She ran her own dress business. She owned her own car and drove it around. She was like the only woman in town who had her own car and drove around town at that time. And rumor had it, this is the clincher here. Rumor had it that my sweet great aunt Opal had been a member of, get this, the Ku Klux Klan. And I was like, my mom told me this. I was just like, what? Aunt Opal? Like my Aunt Opal? Are you serious? Sweet Aunt Opal? It was inconceivable to me. And so what did I learn from this? I learned that family dysfunction is not a rare thing. You guys know this, right? Family dysfunction is not a rare thing. We like to polish things up. And to that point, the last time we looked at Jacob, however many months back that was, I made the point that Jacob's family was no exception whatsoever. His extended family, I believe this is how I put it, his extended family put the funk in dysfunctional, all right? They were funky. For instance, just consider Grandpa Abe again for a moment, all right? He went from his country, as he was commanded, I read that from chapter 12, and when he came into other countries, he put Sarah, his wife, into these really compromising situations. So when they came into Egypt, he said this to his wife. This is later on in chapter 12. I know that you, this is almost immediately after he's off to the races. I know that you are a woman beautiful in appearance, and when the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but they will let you live. Say you are my sister, that it may go well with me because of you, and that my life may be spared. All right? Well, what's he doing here? What's Abraham up to? He's failing to take God at his word, for starters. And so what, he's scheming. He's scheming. He's covering his own hide by throwing his wife under the bus. She ended up being taken into the Pharaoh's home. What sorts of things happened there? The details, we don't get them, but they probably weren't good. And Abraham didn't do this to her once, by the way. He did this to her twice. Later on, we read that Abraham's son Isaac, who's Jacob's father, he does the exact same thing to his wife, Rebekah. So it would seem that the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Or Abraham and Sarah, grandma and grandpa, okay? When it appears that God is not fulfilling his promise to bear them to a son so that they might bless the ends of the earth, so that through Abraham, the nations of the earth could be blessed, what do they do? What do they do about it? Rather than taking God at his word, they come up with a plan B. Wait a second, I know what we can do. They set up an elaborate scheme. And so Abraham, based on her suggestion, Abraham takes one of Sarah's servants, her name is Hagar, and he sleeps with her in order to get a son. And so Ishmael is born. And of course, later on, Sarah does become pregnant and gives birth to Isaac, as promised, but this creates all kinds of dysfunctional situations, all kinds of funk, all kinds of dilemmas, all kinds of difficult dynamics, both within the family and without the family, and going on from there, okay? And so scheming seems to run in the family. It's part of the lineage here. But you don't even need to go back into the back. I just went into the back history, okay? We didn't even need to do that. We could have just stayed right in the text. Just look at chapter 25, verses 27 and 28. Here we read of Jacob's upbringing. It says this, when the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Well, what's going on here? What is this? And this is classic family funk right here. This is family funk 101. Twin brothers who couldn't be more different from one another. And so one becomes a daddy's boy, the other one becomes a mommy's boy. And so we have got a deadly dichotomy right from the start that splits the family right down the middle. And what we learn as we read on is that these two duos, dad and Esau, mom and Jacob, stand in opposition to one another. And under the tutelage of his mother, Jacob, he's trained in the ways of deception. If you read on. Especially if you go over to chapter 27. His mother cooks up an elaborate scheme and puts Jacob to work on it. Go for it, Jacob. We got this. We can do this. And really, this moves us into our next point, the scheme of Jacob's life. But before we get into that, I mean, we got to think about, okay, how is this fresh? How is this relevant? Before we get into that, let me just say, when we hear this, what's the huge temptation here? What's the lie that we're tempted to buy into? What's the scheme? And here it is. We want to say something like, as we hear this, there you go. That's it. That's why I'm so screwed up. That's why I've made all of the poor choices that I've been making my whole life. That's how I got into this mess. It's my funky family. Right. Doug's right. They're to blame for all my troubles. If they were awesome, coming back to this awesome, awful thing. If they were awesome, I'd be awesome, but they're awful, and so I'm awful, and my life's awful, okay? But that's not how the story goes. That's not the story that the scripture tells us. What we see and learn throughout the Bible is that our circumstances, don't make us sinful creatures. We were born in sin. Yes, our sin may be shaped and influenced by the schematics of our lives, by our circumstances, but sin is always ours. When push comes to shove, sin is always ours, and so we can't push it off on anybody else. It belongs to us. And so it is with Jacob. Yes, Jacob comes from a long line of schemers, right? Yes, this is a funky family, but make no mistake, Jacob is a born schemer. And so what is the scheme of Jacob's life, if he is a schemer? What's his scheme? And this is our second point. And we see it here in chapter 25. Look back at verse 29 with me. It says, once when Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the field. You got to imagine this. And he was exhausted. And Esau said to Jacob, let me get some of that red stew, for I am exhausted. Verse 31, Jacob said, sell me your birthright now. Esau said, I am about to die. Of what use is a birthright to me? Jacob said, swear to me now. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew. All right? And just two chapters later, we get into chapter 27. We read of Jacob swindling Esau out of his blessing. He swindles him again. And he tricks his father. He tricks his dad. All right? But again, why? How come? What's driving him? What is Jacob after? And it's very clear, I think, what he's after. He's after the blessing. He wants to get blessed. He wants the privileges. He wants the prominence. He wants the stature. He wants the significance. He wants the respect. This is not uncommon. And probably a more accurate way of putting it would be to say that Jacob wants what Jacob wants. Jacob wants what Jacob wants. This is made very clear to us once he flees the wrath of Esau. He goes to his uncle Laban's, as he's told to do by his mother and his father, and he sees Rachel. All right? There she is. You can like hear the music, you know? Na, na, na. Okay? But he knows, listen, Jacob knows good and well that based on their cultural standards, that he had no right to marry Rachel. But, because Jacob wants what Jacob wants, he's willing to do whatever he's got to do to make it happen. And so he does. And by the way, how is this fresh and relevant for us? Again, I'm going to keep asking that question. Well, that's a question for each of us to answer on our own, isn't it? In other words, what drives you? I'm putting the question back on us. What drives you? What are you after? What is it that you feel that you must have? Like Jacob, do you feel like you're getting ripped off in your life somehow? And if so, how? Do you feel that you need to take things into your own hands and make it happen, like Jacob? What is it that you think that, you know, if I finally get this, then I'll feel significant. And what are you willing to do to get that? Right? And I could, you know, list off some suggestions here, but I'm not going to do that. I would encourage you guys, maybe write these questions down. If one of these questions, like, caught you, if it got its claws into you, write it down. Come back to it later. Sit with it. Ask God to give you some insights. Ask Him, what's driving me, Lord? Where am I scheming? But know this, as you do this, far more important than that question of where am I scheming, the real question that we need to be asking is why? Why am I scheming? Why am I driven by this or that? And in the case of Jacob, what is it? What's the answer? What was it in the case of Abraham? What was it in the case of Isaac in Sarah? What was it in the case of Rebecca plotting and whispering schemes into Jacob's ear? What was it? And it comes down to, I think, a deep dysfunction that resides in each of us. An age-old suspicion. An age-old distrust in the goodness and the work of God in our lives. The sneaking suspicion that perhaps maybe He's scheming against us. Right? That He's withholding good things from us. What happened with Eve, right? When she ate of the tree? Well, someone whispered a scheme into her ear. Isn't that what happened? Somebody whispered into her ear, you will not surely die if you eat from the tree. Instead, your eyes will be open. He's holding back. He's being stingy. Just take it. Take it. It's yours for the taking. And so we tell ourselves, if not Him, then who? If not Him, then who? If he won't give me what I want, if he won't give me what I feel that I need, then who will? I have to get it myself. I don't have time to wait around for him to fulfill my needs. I'll concoct a plan B. And I'll execute it. God helps those who help themselves. Isn't that what it says? Isn't that what they say? And this is Jacob's MO, by the way, in our overview here. This is Jacob's MO, and it's the thing that drives him into deeper and deeper trouble, and this is ultimately what drives Jacob into a deep panic. In the words of Khalil Gibran, our anxiety does not come from thinking about the future, but from wanting to control it. When we find Jacob again in chapter 32, which is also printed here, it seems as though Esau's tracking him down. Esau's looking to get revenge. Esau's looking to cut him down. It seems that Jacob's back is up against the wall, and so he does the only thing that he knows to do. He starts scheming again. He goes back to his same old tricks. We don't have it printed here, but you'll recall, he cooks up an elaborate plan. This is the earlier part of chapter 32, an elaborate plan that would have made his mom very proud, by the way. And in a technical sequence, he begins sending everybody on ahead of him, bit by bit, all right? Sending them on ahead to try to stall for some time, to try to wear down his brother. And then we come to verse 22 of chapter 32, which we do have printed here. You can look at this with me. And we read this: the same night he rose and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had. And Jacob was left alone. And so he even sends his own family out ahead of him, children included. And he does this in the middle of the night. This doesn't seem like a good idea. You know, I mean, this seems like the kind of thing where if it happened in a movie, you'd be watching it and you'd be like, yeah, I don't know if this is going to turn out very good. This seems bad, you know. And then almost as though it's a surprise, Jacob suddenly finds himself all alone in the dark of night. And this is where Jacob's scheme begins to move out of focus. And this is where the grand scheme of God begins to come into focus. And so now we're moving into our last point here, which is the grand scheme of Jacob's life. What does Jacob need? What does he need? After all these years, he still hasn't learned his lesson, okay? He's still a hopeless schemer. What does he need? What do we need? Like, what do you and I, what do we need? Jacob needs an intervention, right? And man, does he ever get one? He gets one. American minister and New Testament scholar Richard Hayes put it like this: the encounter with God, as Genesis 32 describes it, is a fearsome one. If we unworthy servants are to be transferred from the power of darkness, that means God is going to have to come after us in the dark. If we are honest with ourselves, we will see it couldn't be any other way. So what happens? God graciously goes after Jacob. He finds Jacob in the dark of the night. He finds Jacob in the dark night of his soul. And he jumps him. He picks a fight with him. Right? He graciously, I should put it that way, he graciously picks a fight with him. And it's right on time, okay? Jacob's up for it. Jacob's ready to wrestle. Have you ever wrestled with God before? Have you done that? Have you ever wrestled with God before? Have you ever said, I won't let you go? I need your blessing. My blessings have been flopping left and right. I've been scheming my whole life, and I just end up feeling cursed. Please, God, give me your blessing. And so what does God give him, by the way? What does God give him? Do you remember this? He gives him a busted hip and a new name. He gives him a busted hip and a new name. Now, is this a blessing? Is it? Maybe not by our estimation. But in God's wise providence, it was an act of tremendous grace in the life of Jacob. Hebrew and literature professor Robert Alter made this observation. He said, a powerful physical metaphor is intimated by the story of wrestling. Jacob, whose name can be construed as he who acts crookedly, is bent, permanently lamed by his nameless adversary in order that he might be made straight. So God lovingly busted his hip. He marked him. From that day forward, he was marked. He marked him. And he said to him, No longer shall your name be Jacob. No longer shall you be called the crooked one. No longer shall you be called schemer. Your name shall be called Israel. All right. So get this. God provided Jacob with a whole new identity. This is what this would have meant for him. Have you ever felt like you needed that? Have you ever felt like you needed that? Like, man, I wish I could just start all over again. I need a redo. I need a second chance. Shoot, I need a whole new life. I need a new name. And here's the thing. This is Jacob's introduction to the grand scheme of God. We read this, maybe, and we think to ourselves, yeah, but that was Jacob. Sure, this isn't inspiring. Yes, this is fresh. I'll admit it. You know, this is relevant to me. But that's not my blessing. That's Jacob's blessing. That's got nothing to do with me. Except it does, though. It does. This is so much more than Jacob's moment happening right here. This is the grand scheme. Because remember what God said to Grandpa Abe, okay? He said, I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. In you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And so in Jacob's life here, we get a glimpse of what God has in mind. We get a glimmer of what God's up to here. Whether Jacob realized it or not, when he went limping out into the light the very next morning, Jacob's life was suddenly about so much more than Jacob all of a sudden. Yes, God graciously came after him. Yes, God marked him and changed him and gave him a new name. None of that should be minimalized. I'm not trying to minimize any of that. But this act was so much bigger than Jacob's life, which is great news for Jacob, isn't it? I mean, isn't that good news for Jacob? Because up until now, it's been the Jacob show. And it's been a total dead-end road for him. So this is good news. Later on in the book of Genesis, I think this is very interesting. Hopefully we'll be able to touch on this more as we get into it. But later on, whenever we hear Jacob being referred to by his new name, whenever he's referred to as Israel, in every instance, it's very hard to tell if it's him who's being addressed or if it's the people on the whole that are being addressed. In other words, as the story goes on, Israel is becoming Israel. Jacob is becoming a nation, and the promise of God moves forward. The grand scheme continues to unfold before our very eyes. So perhaps God is poking around in your life. I don't know. Does it feel like that to you? Maybe it feels like he's got you in a pretzel hole. Speaking of wrestling. All right. And so get this. It's about you. It is. It's about you. And then again, it's not. He's out to get you. He's out to get your attention. He's out to win your heart and your mind to himself. He's out to redeem your life. But he's after so much more than that. In the process, he's after so much more. It's so much more than just you and your little story and me and my little story. He's got huge aspirations in your life. Huge aspirations that go well beyond even you. And that's good news. Isn't it? I mean, that's good news. Now, maybe you say, not me. Listen, not me. I'm too crooked. I'm bent beyond repair. He couldn't possibly straighten me out. How would he do that? Here's how. While Jacob got a broken hip, this is the gospel, all right? While Jacob got a, this is the blessing. While Jacob got a broken hip, God got a broken heart. In order that you and I might be given a whole new identity, the Son of God was bent and broken to the point of death. And he, by the way, he promised this, okay? He didn't keep it a secret. He promised this. In fact, he with more clarity and more specificity, is that how you say the word? He articulated, he proclaimed the grand scheme of God in ways that we don't get in chapter 12, in the ways that God alluded to it to Abraham. Speaking to his disciples, he said this, "We are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him and spit on him, flog him and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise. Just a few sentences later, he says, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve." It's bigger. It's a blessing. But to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many is a blessing to all the families of the earth. That's just a snapshot of the life of Jacob. But within the grand scheme of things. And I just want to say, if you're like me and you feel the title of this message is what? A schemer in the grand scheme. If you're like me and sometimes you feel like a schemer in the grand scheme of things, take solace in this message. If he went after Jacob, a scoundrel, he'll go after you too with his redeeming love so that he can sweep you up into the grand scheme of things, make your life so much bigger than you, less claustrophobic, more free, liberating. Father, thank you so much. Thank you so much that you reveal yourself to us. You don't hide. In your word, you show us yourself in so many ways. And you don't just show us yourself, but you show us what you're like, how you act, what your posture is towards people just like us. All these years later, your words are so fresh, so relevant for us. And God, I pray for all of my friends here. We've come through these doors with so many different kinds of needs, with so many different kinds of backgrounds, different kinds of family funk. We're going through different things right now, and yet we know that you can meet each of us in the specificity of our circumstances. And God, I pray that you would do that. I pray that you would be taking this word, that you would be refining it, the imperfections of it, and that you would massage it into our hearts. You would massage it into our minds, that we might know you. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.